What's up, everyone? Welcome to another edition of the Throwback Podcast. This is your host, Ryan the Podman.
And me, Jimmy the Radio Man, Daddy.
We have another great show lined up for you today. Our special guest will be one of the hosts of the popular 90s Nickelodeon TV show, Wild and Crazy Kids, Donnie Jeffcoat. Hey, Jimmy, what are you doing over there?
Every time I hear something here, Daddy, I'm so pumped about having Donnie Jeffcoat on the show. Wild and Crazy Kids used to be my show, Daddy.
I love Wild and Crazy Kids, too. I always wanted to be one of the kids on the show. It looks so much fun. I always... Jimmy!
Sorry about that, Daddy.
You never answered my question. What are you doing over there? Why are you drilling so many holes, and why is there a kiddie pool here?
Oh, I was working on this cool new obstacle course, Daddy.
Obstacle course in our studio. Why are we doing this?
I'm so excited about that we're doing a Wild and Crazy episode that I'm building this cool water slide obstacle course for us to do after the show, Daddy.
We don't have the space for this. And what water slide? I only see a kiddie pool and a bunch of drilled up holes.
Of course we have space, Daddy. And water slide is on the way. As a matter of fact, it's here right now.
Hey, what are you guys ordering a water slide?
Right here, Daddy. Just set it up right over here.
Okay. Bring it in, boys.
What the... Jimmy, we don't have the space for this. Don't mind, Jimmy, everybody. Like I was telling you, we have a great show lined up for you today. As always, if you like what you hear, be sure to check us out on Twitter at Throw Podcast, THROW Podcast, or on Instagram at Throwback_Podcast. And drop us your feedback as well as look for us on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and iHeartRadio, or wherever you download your favorite podcasts. Now, here's our exclusive interview with former host of Nickelodeon's Wild and Crazy Kids, Donnie Jeffcoat.
You are listening to the Throwback Podcast, your stop for everything 90s. This is a throwback exclusive.
Joining me at this time is the former host of the popular Nickelodeon 90s TV show Wild and Crazy Kids, and also appeared in other TV shows such as The Wonder Years in Seventh Heaven. I'm pleased to welcome Donnie Jeffcoat. Donnie, how are you doing?
Good. How you doing?
I'm doing pretty well. Thanks for coming on the show.
Oh, man, it's a pleasure to be here. Thanks for having me. Glad we got a chance to connect.
Yeah, so what have you been up to lately? Like, I know you've been a pretty busy man, heavily.
Yeah. You know, about 8 years ago, I started my own martial arts self-defense academy up here in North Hollywood, and that's kept me really busy, and it's just kind of been growing and taking off and keeping my life pretty active. So running around doing things for the dojo, and of course keeping that ship sailing forward, and then I travel and teach around the world. And, you know, I have friends in Europe that we go and share mat time and ideas, and I teach seminars in England and Holland and such, and then sometimes I'll go across to the East Coast and teach, and so it kind of keeps me traveling and active and creative. So it's been a neat journey.
All right, that's awesome. So when you were a kid growing up, were you like really big into karate?
You know, it's fun. I started karate the same year as I started acting. Now I had started in theater a few years before. I think I was about 8 years old, seven or eight, when I was living in Oklahoma. I auditioned for, I think it was at the Oklahoma State College, The Music Man. And my mom and my sister, I guess, maybe read about it in the newspaper or something like that. So I just went ahead and auditioned, didn't really have a clue on what I was doing, and ended up getting into that production. And I guess that's kind of when I got the acting bug. I got bit by the acting bug and started my interest in it. And the family ended up moving to California, I believe, in late 1984. And that was because of my dad's business. A lot of people thought that it was because of the acting stuff, but that was just my dad's company.
Oh, yeah.
Moved us out there, and we moved down to Orange County in Irvine, where I started doing some acting of South Coast Repertory, which is in Orange County, a pretty big theater. And I think, man, it was a long time ago, but I think I got scouted by an agent back then, and that's kind of how my acting journey started. And around that same time, you know, my agent, I think, recommended me getting into martial arts just to put it on my resume. And of course, back in those days, as a kid, I was big into Kung Fu and Bruce Lee and Karate Kid and, you know, Steven Seagal movies.
Yeah, those
and all
were the
stuff,
best movies.
So, you bet. Chuck Norris. So just like any other kid in the 80s. So, you know, I kind of got addicted to that and started training religiously all through my childhood as far as martial arts goes, and kept up with that in the acting. So I think it was back in 2002, I moved back from New York after doing One Life to Live for a few years, and came back to California, and I had taken a pretty big hiatus from martial arts because of just my busy schedule as an actor, and decided to get back involved and kind of fell into teaching as an assistant in between still doing some television and film in my 30s, and just kind of fell in love with it. And I had been doing the acting thing for so many years, I just decided that, you know what, this is something that I really enjoy doing. It's much more stable. I kind of watched the industry change a lot over the years with social media and reality television and such. And so this just kind of fell in my lap, and I decided that I could do it on my own, and it's just taken off, you know. And it's also allowed me to actually enjoy acting again too. So when I do come up with an audition here or there, you know, or you know, some friends are doing a film and they're like, "Hey, you want to do the fight?" It's enjoyable now. I don't have to worry about chasing the dream like back in the day, and the anxiety between the jobs and auditions and all that stuff. You know, it's now an art again, which is really nice for me. So
yeah.
I can enjoy it and appreciate it. And I had a great life back in the day, so I have no regrets whatsoever. This new martial arts journey has taken me in a whole new direction, which is just awesome as well.
That's awesome. How old were you when you first got your first acting gig?
I think I started the commercial world, and I think I was about 9 or 10 years old. And then I think the Wonder Years, I was around 11, maybe. And I mean, because it was around 1985, 1986.
Right.
And then just kept on working throughout my childhood in television and film. And it's pretty much all I knew. I mean, I went to school at public high school and such. But I think I was really in high school only about 50% of the time, because I was, you know, doing Wild and Crazy Kids starting in 1989.
Right.
And with Wild and Crazy Kids, that went from 89 to 93, which was actually my freshman year in high school all the way through my senior year. Sure. We filmed during the summertime primarily. I mean, we did have some episodes filmed throughout the year, but majority of the season for us was during the summer, because that's when we could get the kids out, you know, from out of school to join in the games. And I think we did 70-something episodes in those three seasons. And then in 93, when I graduated, that's when Nickelodeon got the idea to do the live shows. And they started doing like live versions of their different shows, like Double Dare and such. And right. Wild and Crazy Kids became one of those. So they asked a few of us to start traveling a little bit. And I told Nickelodeon back then, because I love to travel, I was like, look, use me as much as you can. So I ended up going on tour with Wild and Crazy Kids live for almost 3 years, from 93 to 96, I believe, something like that. And we went all over the country and ended up in Brunei at one point. The Sultan of Brunei's four-year-old niece, Princess Akita, I think her name was. You got to ask. Brian, let's see, who's with us? Brian Stenson, actually, he's the creator of Dance Moms now, but he was my co-host, and we traveled out to Brunei on Royal Bruneian Airlines and did a huge show for the royalty and the princess for her birthday.
Wow.
It was such a trip. Yeah, quite an interesting trip. You don't get many invites to Brunei these days. So yeah, man, that was cool. And yeah, man, that was it. I toured for many years, and in between the touring, I would do a couple of episodes of this, that, and the other in a movie here or there. And then in 1997, I moved to New York to do One Life to Live.
Wow. Oh, it's a soap opera, right?
Yes, sir. Yep.
Wow. So how did you like doing soap operas compared to like game shows and TV shows?
You know, every part of my entertainment career was just a different level of interesting. So no matter if I was doing television or film or theater or hosting or soap operas, it was just all kind of just a different journey, and it kind of kept everything fresh. So for me, it was just I loved to work, and I just wanted to stay busy and kind of try it all. So soap operas were fun. They taught me a lot. I had never done such a long run on one. I had done a couple of guest stars and reoccurring roles back in my teenage years. I think it was General Hospital and Days of Our Lives. But when I did One Life to Live, you know, it was more intense. We were doing, you know, multiple shows a week, and you were forced to, you know, get into a habit of picking up a script and being able to memorize it very quickly and adjust and adapt to their notes and their additions and such that they'd make throughout the filming days. So it was high, you know, it was kind of fast paced, taught me a lot. And yeah. It was a great time of my life. I was in my 20s living in New York, had a great experience out there, made a lot of new friends. It was just that big slice of life that I would never regret and certainly appreciate nowadays. I look back and I'm going, wow, what an interesting time, you know. Just like the tour on, you know, Nickelodeon during my high school days, it was like, you know, we were all over the place there. And then when I graduated, being able to travel and get paid for travel was a gift, man. It was just an awesome, awesome time in my life.
That's awesome. Going back to when you were a kid before you started on Wild and Crazy Kids, were you a big fan of Nickelodeon before you were on the show?
I was. I think like majority of us, I'm not sure your age, but I was big. But back in my day, I was a huge fan of You Can't Do That on Television. That was my generation. And I think they were still filming it. You say you're located up in Canada. Yeah. Nickelodeon, I believe, was a Canadian network at one point. And so the you can't do that on Television was filming up there. And I just remember always wanting to be on that show. The slime and it was kind of like a SNL for kids, you know?
Yeah, pretty
so,
much.
I was big into it. And I remember getting the audition for Wild and Crazy Kids. I think I had just screen tested for the Mickey Mouse Club, and I didn't get that, and then ended up literally just a few months later on Wild and Crazy Kids. And I didn't know what I was getting myself into. I'd never hosted before. So, and honestly, all through the years that we were filming, Nickelodeon did a good job of hiding the popularity from us. And so we didn't, in fact, I think it was Omar's mom who went into the office one day and found a big box of fan mail. So if anybody's listening and they sent us fan mail back in the day, we never got it.
Really?
Nickelodeon got it, but we didn't get it. So that actually, when we found that out, we realized they were trying to, I believe, kind of keep the popularity away from us, so we didn't try to bump our yearly income up every season.
Yeah. Oh, that's so you're trying to hide it from you guys. They probably didn't.
Yeah, you know, I had no idea. I really until we were, I think, done with the show, that's when I realized that we had happened to be the number one kids game show on Nickelodeon back then. And then I think it was Arnold Schwarzenegger at that point was representing like some sort of an athletic department in the government. And he had us at the White House for that one episode he was in. And we were kind of rewarded the best kids show for keeping kids healthy and active. So we got, that was when Bush was president, Bush Senior. And we went to the White House and met the president and did the show out there that weekend. And Arnold Schwarzenegger was one of our guests. And I think Dana Carvey? Remember the SNL skit with the I Pump You Up guys?
Yeah, I remember that. Yeah.
Those two guys were guest stars on the show.
Oh, wow. That's so awesome.
Yeah, pretty interesting stuff.
And getting an honor.
Like, yeah, we didn't really know about the popularity. I mean, I wish that I've got all that the fan mail, because I would have certainly written back to many of the fans. I think we all would have. I remember even in high school starting to get recognized here and there, and I was like totally oblivious. Did not realize that
That's just hilarious to me. So they just kept all the fan mail in like one room hidden from you guys?
I guess. I never saw it. I just know that I was told that she had found some big box of it. And I don't know if they decided that they would answer it for us or what, but those were different times.
You know, I hear business was a different beat. Shows of similar stories of like people sending fan mail, and when they get something back, it looks like a pre-printed autograph of the person. Is that what they didn't actually sign it?
Yeah. I can't really remember. But back then, these were the days where, like, the child hours laws were not so, you know, the work laws were not so strict and rigid. So, I mean, they got away with, like, keeping us over, and they pushed the envelope a lot, you know, working us extra hours and such like that. It was just a different world, you know. Things have really tightened up for the child actors these days. There's a lot more, I think, rules and regulations, and they're stiffer. I think they're more rigid on, I think the rules were in place back then, but they just kind of, a lot of people turned their head the other way. And these days they just don't get by with that. So, and they, you know, they were also trying to, I believe, protect the fact that, you know, they didn't want us coming back and saying, nope, we want more money this year. We want. So it is what it is. We were throwing eggs at each other and whipped cream pies in the face and slime and playing all these ridiculous games and getting paid for it. So that's quite honestly, man, right, no complaints on my end. I had a darn good life back then, my friend. So I look back and go, you know, what the heck? You get paid for that kind of life. I could not beat it.
Yeah, you're living the life of every kid basically around that time, man.
Yeah, it's funny these days, you know, I have students who now recognize me, you know, as it takes them a while. Sometimes they'll sign up and start training with me. And then suddenly one day they'll kind of have an epiphany. Oh, what? You're Donnie from Wild and Crazy Kids. Like, yeah, that was me back in the mullet days, blonde hair and a nice long mullet and a wave up front with some Aquanet.
Yeah. So, when you became, what was the process like for becoming one of the co-hosts on the on Wild and Crazy Kids? Was it like a long process for you? Like, what did you have to do?
I think it was about a 3 audition process. So they put us on tape for the first audition, and then they had callbacks. I believe I remember being put on tape for the second one, and then they had like a little screen test where they brought us in groups of 3, I think, just trying to match us up with the right co-host, you know, so that we were the right team. So I believe it was about a three audition process. Very, very common back then. You know, you'd have your first audition, then your call back, and then you screen test. And usually after the screen test and the network, you know, had to choose who they, you know, their picks. And then they went into the process of negotiations with agents and managers. But I do know that we weren't necessarily owned directly by Nickelodeon. So, for instance, I know Double Dare, that was a Nickelodeon-sponsored show. Nick Arcade, Guts, all of that stuff was like pure Nick. Whereas Woody Frazier Productions actually owned the rights to Wild and Crazy Kids. Now, Woody Frazier was the creator of That's Incredible and several other shows back in the 70s and 80s. And he was our executive producer. I think he was the main money man. And then Mark Summers, I believe, was one of the execs as well, because he kind of took the idea off of Double Dare and wanting to bring it outside, the same concept. That's why you kind of saw a lot of the similarities in games and such. So he was a big part of it as well. And that was my understanding. I could be off a little bit, but I was young and didn't know everything about what was going on. But yeah, so I think that's why you don't see, for instance, I think we don't see a lot of the reruns going on anymore. You know, like they brought a couple of the old nostalgic Nick shows back, and I think it's because Nickelodeon was not necessarily 100% owner of the Wild and Crazy Kids trademark.
Oh, that's interesting. I never knew that. Mark Summers was actually on episode, wasn't he?
He did a couple of episodes, I think, with us. Yeah, he came in as a guest star. I think some of the kids from All That was on. I think kids from Hey Dude came on.
Saved by the Bell, too, I think, a couple.
Yeah, they were the last season. They really started bringing a lot of like young celebrities as guest stars on. That was like the new season, kind of new style of the show for that final season.
Yeah, the show was only on the air for 3 years, but it felt like it was on the air longer. I think due to syndication and being on the air for so long.
Well, yeah, I mean, you're right, because something I was oblivious to, I was still, you know, just doing my acting stuff outside, you know, once I got off Wild and Crazy Kids, mm-hmm. I was doing Seventh Heaven and Dr. Quinn, Medicine Woman, and just, you know, a bunch of little television and movies. In fact, Wish Upon a Star was very similar situation as Wild and Crazy Kids through Disney. We weren't a Disney film until Disney bought it. And that's how it became so popular, because the Disney Channel picked it up and they ran that movie over and over and over again. But then with Wild and Crazy Kids, I didn't know that they were rerunning them, but they reran them supposedly all the way through 2001. Because one day when I got home, I had moved back from New York in about, I think it was February of 2002.
Yeah.
And within the first few months of living here, I came home from an audition back to my apartment, and sitting on my front doorstep was a big giant manila envelope, just like stuffed to the rim. I think there were maybe two of them.
Right.
And I didn't know what it was. It was from SAG. And I picked it up, went inside, opened it up, and it was literally over 100 checks from Nickelodeon, all residual checks from back pay over the years that they had been rerunning it, all between like 42 cents all the way up to $5 and change. Wow. Like, so all of that added up. I remember back then having to go to the bank, sit down with the bank person, and she looked at me like, just what the heck are we going to do here? I had to sign every single one of those checks, and she had to process them. So she's like, this is a happy day. I go, it is. I said, they should have saved a lot of paper. They could have just put this all together. But I remember saving those checks up in my closet for a long time, because I just thought it was so cool. I needed that money so bad. And it ended up being a good chunk of money once I calculated it up. So it was like, oh, you know, happy birthday to me.
I hear that.
So yeah, man. I didn't know that they were rerunning it. And I then even found out that they tried a Wild and Crazy Kids 2. I guess they did. They attempted to bring it back with some new hosts, but I didn't know. I don't know.
When
if
was
really...
this?
This was back in the late 90s, I believe. I had it been after 1997. I was living in New York at the time, but I think they did make a few episodes of a revamp. It just didn't go. Didn't catch.
Yeah.
So.
You can't. Some you do all these remakes. It's not always the same. Sometimes it works. Sometimes it doesn't. So
exactly.
Because I don't even remember that, and I still watch Nickelodeon around that time.
Yeah. I don't even know if it made air. I just heard about it.
Wow. Speaking of that, how was it like working on set of Wild and Crazy Kids the very first time when you're your first day starting out? How was it?
Right. We were all having a blast. I mean, we were young, and you know, we're either at the beach or at a park, and it was fun. I mean, those were great days. I remember some of the most fun days that we had were at water parks. So we'd get there at like 6-7 o'clock in the morning, and no one, you know, obviously would be there. So it was open just to our crew and filming. And I would bring some of my buddies with me to work. So they would get in obviously free to the raging waters or wild rivers or where we were. Mm-hmm. And sorry, my AC just popped on. So I remember some of the most fun days were just kind of having that VIP access to some of these parks and stuff that we were at, climbing up the water slides when the water wasn't on, and being able to get, you know, when we were on tour, we would be doing all the Paramount Six Flags parks and such around the country.
Right.
And so in between our shows, we'd have one of the representatives of the park take us right in front of the line, and we'd ride all the roller coasters, me and Phil Moore, Mike O'Malley. And that was our thing. We'd always find the coolest roller coaster. I think I've rode just about every darn big roller coaster around this country with those guys.
So, oh my Awesome. That's a big perk to have, man.
Oh, man, it was awesome. So I can't complain, man. Yeah. I can't remember the first episode, honestly, but I do remember back in those days, my freshman year in high school. And I think one of the most difficult things was sometimes it was windy. Sometimes they would always change the games. So the scripts were changing, you know, quite often. We'd always have them write out the monologues in the show openings and cold openings and such on big pieces of cardboard. So we'd have one guy holding them up in front of the camera so we could read off of them, especially when they changed them last minute.
Right.
But it was fun. We had good producers. Everybody was, you know, very supportive and nice. And all of us always got along, me and Omar and Annette and Jessica. We never had any problems. So
that's awesome.
It was good. Yeah, it was pretty good energy. I mean, again, the producers, they pushed us a little bit sometimes. And I was emancipated, so I didn't have a parent a lot of times on set with me, whereas some of the other kids did. I would sometimes be the one that they would kind of, hey, Donnie, can you stay for another hour? We're losing light. We need to get this shot in, you know. And then, of course, the other kids' parents were like, no, we're leaving. This has been a 14-hour day. It's against the law. So I'd be the one, the guinea pig. I don't know if you ever noticed how I was also the guy who was always the guinea pig when it comes to mess.
Like, yeah, I was the guy who took. I was going to bring that up. Yeah, I kind of noticed that.
You know, and that was a lot of times where it is because I didn't have that parent on set to say, hey guys, can you give this to somebody else today? I remember spending half my day smelling like rotten eggs. I mean, after you go through whipped cream and rotten eggs and they don't have any showers for you, you're going to the, you know, whatever little water source you can, whether it be a water fountain or a hose. Right. And you rinse off, and then of course the rest of the day, I'll never forget just feeling so disgusting. You smell like literally a just a box of rotten eggs and whipped cream and soured milk. Yeah, so they'd pour that green slime, which was made of vanilla pudding and green food coloring and applesauce, and that's what they made the green slime out of. So it was totally edible, but it was certainly not sun friendly, heat friendly.
So not a good way to pick up a day, that's for sure.
Oh, you bet, buddy. You bet. So
I have a question. Where did you guys find all these kids to be on the show? How did a kid be so lucky to appear on there?
So they had a kind of wranglers, kid wranglers, where the producers or certain producers, assistant producers, would go out wherever in the area we were going to be filming, and they'd put posters up and let the local, you know, schools and YMCAs and Boys and Girls Clubs know that we were going to be around. So it would basically, within a 3-mile radius, they just kind of blanket the area with, you know, Wild and Crazy Kids is coming to your town. And most of the filming, I'd say probably 75 or more percent of all the episodes we did was up here. We're done up here in North Hollywood area, San Fernando Valley, down in Hollywood, you know, different parks and stuff were a lot of, especially the first season, we were doing a lot of stuff in Malibu and Zuma and such, a lot of the state beaches. So yeah, they would sometimes bus them in, sometimes they'd all just show up. I remember everybody was always super excited about being there though. And they loved those t-shirts. I signed so many of those t-shirts. I still have a few, actually.
Oh, you still have a few? Yeah. Oh, yeah. Just a few. I love those t-shirts, by the way. Those shirts were awesome.
I know.
You should have sold those shirts on. I don't know. There's no internet to sell it online, but maybe.
I think you can find them online. I'm pretty sure somebody's making them. I got a couple from the Comic-Con that we did a few years ago, but I still have an original one, I believe, from back in the day, maybe a couple of original ones. I think my parents saved them.
Oh, that's awesome. Yeah.
Yeah.
So
I have a lot of pictures from back in the day too, man.
I
sometimes catch them and I'm like, wow, what an interesting little chunk of my life. So.
And it's probably the period of time you're most recognized for.
Yeah. That I'd say Wild and Crazy Kids, Wish Upon a Star, and One Life to Live would have kind of been the three Seventh Heaven as well. Yeah. Okay. They're one of the ones that people recognize me from the most. It's hard to bring that little Donnie Jeff Coat blonde kid out anymore. I mean, I got so many gray hairs, brother, now.
You can always dye it.
Oh, I stopped just for fermenting years ago, my friend. Yeah. I couldn't keep up. I just gave up and said, okay, let the white and the grays come in. I'm Silver Fox now.
That's good. That's still good. When you filmed Wild and Crazy Kids, how long did it take to film an episode?
I think a day. I think we did at least two shows a week, I want to say. And then we'd film, like, I want to say it was usually weekends. We'd film two or three. And then on Wednesday nights, we would go to the sound stage and actually do all the recordings, like, you know, hey, welcome to Wild and Crazy Kids. This is with your host, Donnie Jeffcoat, and you know, the show that goes anywhere and does anything, you know, all that stuff. We'd record that every Wednesday night, and we do our VO voiceover stuff.
Right.
In the sound stage up here, and actually right down the street from me now. It was North Hollywood area.
Oh, that's pretty cool. Yeah.
Yep. So, I think we were doing a couple a week at least. That's how we pumped out so many. I think it was, I think I remember hearing, and it shocked me, I think 74 or 78, something like that. I didn't know we did that many, but we did.
Wow. Yeah. I know it was on the air for so, it kind of does in a way, because it was on the air for so long, like I was saying before, even after it was off the air for like, it was on the air for like almost like another 10 years after it ended.
Well, yeah. I mean, you're looking at starting in 89. And then it went all the way through. I heard through 2001, and I know that they were rerunning them all through the 90s. Because I mean, we finished our last episode, I do know, in 1993, That was the year I graduated high school. And then we went on tour with a live version, but that wasn't taped. That was just live around the country.
Yeah.
And then I ended up on Mega Messamania with Mike O'Malley and Phil Moore. The three of us were and Jonathan, what was his last name from Hey Dude? I can't remember his last name, but John was on tour sometimes with us as well.
Wow.
So, and Jessica, I think, did a few of the Wild and Crazy Kids lives, and I think Omar might have done one or two as well. But I think I did the majority of the live shows.
You did the most of them?
Yeah. Yeah, and then they got me involved with the big truck show, the Mega Messamania show. I don't know if you ever heard of that, but that was with like the big Nickelodeon with the Rugrats, and of course the Wild and Crazy Kids host, the Nick Arcade host, the Guts host. It was like a big, I think it was a two truck show. So we played Madison Square Garden, we played the Great Western Forum. Like the setup was really it was like a big concert series. So that was neat. That was fun. We had special effects and explosions, and that was a blast. That was some of the most fun times I had on tour was with that show.
That must have been a blast performing in front of like a big live audience like that.
Yeah, that was so much fun, brother. The cool thing about it was also we'd do these big venues, and because of a lot of our crew worked with a lot of the rock and roll and bands and such, rock and roll stars, we get in VIP for just about anybody and everybody that was playing the same venue that weekend. So we might go in and do our show during the day on Saturday, but then Saturday night, you know, Iggy Pop or the Ramones, or I remember seeing them, or Fish. Just several different bands would be playing different venues that we'd be around the country, and that we'd always get backstage passes, and we'd go to these really cool concerts. Wow. That, you know, and the next day we'd get up and do our show on the same stage. So
that's pretty cool. That's pretty cool. I was gonna say, who came up with some of the concepts for some of the games on the show? I know we mentioned earlier that you said Mark Summers you said he was like an executive producer on the show.
I think he was, or at least he had a lot of influence on it. I want to say he was partnered with Woody Frazier. But I'd have to look that up. It's been so long. But a lot of the games were made up. We had a crew of about three producers, and then we had some supervising producers as well. So that team of young people, and I think back then they were in their 30s and early 40s, but most of them in their 30s, young yeah. people, and they were coming up with a lot of the games. Like I remember hearing that some of the games like Dizzy Bat Baseball and stuff were actually based on fraternity games, like drinking games and yeah. stuff. So at least that's what I heard, or vice versa. It was you guys all learned from the show these crazy games. Then when you went to college, you turned Wild and Crazy Kids games into drinking games. So, you know, but I do know that a lot of them were experimental as well. And I can guarantee many days they panicked because not all those games worked. I remember the producers being in a panic on where this is not working. We're going to have to change. So they learned to do a backup plan. Always having a backup plan really helped us run smoother days because sometimes a game just fell apart. And I also know that some of those games were so dangerous. I mean, some of them, again, this is a different time, different era.
Yeah.
I remember one day they decided to get these moon boots, and for some reason they used these darn moon boots over and over again in different games, and we always hated it because you talk about rolling an ankle or busting your knee. Right. You put these things on and they had like tire rubber kind of laced in between, and they had this kind of bounce to them, totally unstable, and we'd have to jump up and down and pop the balloons with like some helmet with a nail on it or what have you. But sometimes it was just like you couldn't believe that people didn't break their ankle, roll their ankle. We didn't have many injuries though, thank God. So, but yeah, I think they were pretty much, when we were not filming, they were in the office having these big group meetings and trying to come up with all those crazy games.
Did you guys, like you, Omar, Jessica, or Annette, did you guys ever have any input on some ideas for any of the games? Did they ever come to you guys for any suggestions?
No, I don't think so. We pretty much just got the scripts, read the scripts, and they would let us. I remember they were pretty good at if I called, you know, if I didn't like something in the script or something sounded off, I'd be able to kind of change the wording, or I'd call with a concern. They were always willing to listen to us and work with us. But a lot of times it was just, you know, shut up, Donnie, get out there and do it.
I guess because you're still a kid.
yeah, you know. I tried not to be too big of a pain in the butt.
Yeah.
So. But yeah, man, it was good days, I tell you.
Yeah. So when did Jessica come? It was season two, right? When she took over for Annette.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. She came in the second season, and that was the first season. And Jessica finished the last two seasons with us.
Right. What was it like working with both of them? Like, was there any differences? Like, can you compare how it was working?
They had different. They have a different flavor. You know, different energy. Yeah. But. Both easy to work with, and again, like I said, I can't remember anybody never, you know, we always got along. I was the oldest. I think Omar was like a year. I think everybody was about a year younger than me, except for Annette was, I think, maybe a year older than me.
Right.
We all got along. We didn't do a lot of hanging out outside of the show, though. I lived down in Orange County at that time.
Right.
So, and they all lived up here. So it was, we didn't socialize a lot outside the show, but we always gave each other hugs on set and worked well together. There were some days that, you know, 100 degree weather was not a very fun day outside all day in the sun. And there were some days that, like I said, the games wouldn't work and people would get frustrated and producers got, you know, stressed out because of time constraints and scheduling. And sometimes I remember having a problem with the amount of kids that showed up, not enough for the games. So right. I remember sometimes even them having, you know, guests, like I'd bring friends with me sometimes on set and they'd pull my friends up and they'd be on the show, or even producers would hop in and act as though they were parents. So anything to get, you know. And then of course sometimes you'd ask a volunteer if they want to do this particular game, and they see the game and they're like, I ain't gonna do that. No, I don't want to do that. So you know, but you, it was just like your typical filming. Everybody had to just work it out. It's like a big puzzle piece. Somehow they did it, because it was a successful show. I did not know how much influence we had on a bunch of the younger generation. So
yeah, you can make a good argument. I think after Double Dare, Wild and Crazy Kid was probably the most popular Nickelodeon game show like ever. Probably.
Yeah, I mean Guts and Nick Arcade were huge.
Those
were in studio shows were huge. But yeah, we were very popular, a lot more popular, like I said, than what we all knew about. So it was just an exciting game, and like I said, it was kind of fun to watch the kids, I think, play games outside. It kept people athletic and off their couches. And I also think that as kids, you know, it gave kids these great ideas using their imagination on how to create their own crazy games. And of course, at that age, everybody loves the idea of you know, slamming pies into each other's faces and getting barrels of gack and slime dumped over your head and throwing eggs at each other. I mean, you can't really go wrong with that offering to a bunch of kids.
That's so true. Do you personally have any favorite game or episode from the show? Like,
I think the one that always stands out, and I don't know why, because I think it's also one that fans bring up to me a lot, is Dizzy Bat Baseball. I even remember the park is right up here in Burbank that we filmed that at. For some reason, that group of episodes, because we did, I think, two or three episodes at that one park.
You hosted all of them, too, didn't you?
I think so. I think so. I'd have to go back. Man, I have not taken a look at anything.
I like that game, too. Because I think the adults had to spin with the bats, right?
Yeah. It was funny to watch. I think it was just everybody was genuinely laughing. There was no, like, I tell you, one of the worst episodes for me was the one that one thing that we did sometimes argue about is, you know, I'd say, Omar, why are you getting to host this game? Because I'm hosting a ridiculous game today. Why did I get this ridiculous game? I want his game. Why did Omar get that game? But one of them was try to make me laugh. And it was just, I mean, like, just borderline embarrassing. I had to sit in that chair, and those kids had to come up and try to make me laugh. And finally, the producers were like, Donnie, you're going to have to fake laugh. You're just going to have to push one out. And I remember going, this is just the most awkward thing. Why? Who made this game up? You should be fired. This is horrible. Because it did not work. These kids were not funny. I wasn't in the mood to laugh.
Yeah.
So that was one of, I think, the lesser successful games that we had.
Yeah. You have any funny behind the scenes or bloopers, like in between sets or recordings from the episodes that happened to you or anyone?
Shoot. I fell off of a stage while doing Wild and Crazy Kids Live. I think it was up in Alaska. We had a problem there for a while because we would have our three or four stage men, you know, stage crew come with us and travel with us. So they knew our show. They knew the games. They knew how to clean it up. But then we would hire locally a few extra stagehands, right? And they would learn the games and the show very quickly and basically just be told what to do. Right. The problem is you have all of that mess on a stage, it gets slippery. And if you don't squeegee it with the right amount of water and cleaning product between the games during the live show, it's like an ice skating rink. So several times we would run out and, you know, from the side of the side stage, you know, wings of the stage, we'd run out in between and try to get the audience going. We, of course, we had written dialogue back and forth and jokes and such that we were telling. And I remember hitting those little slick spots and just landing straight on my ass. Boom! I mean, knock the wind out of you. Just, you know, drop the mic, right? Well, one time I hit one of those slicks and I want to say we were somewhere up in Northwest. It was either Alaska or Washington State, something like that. And I hit that slick spot and it went right off the stage. Then I dropped down 13 feet into an orchestra pit onto my spine.
Oh, shit.
And to this day, I've had spinal problems. I've had, I was supposed to have surgery a couple of weeks ago, but that was the onset of very uncomfortable lower back issue because I dislocated the spine. Couldn't walk for 2 weeks almost. It took a long time to correct that. But I could barely, I don't think I finished that show. I think that.
And when was this? When
did you this was back in probably 1993, 94. It was one of the first seasons of the tour that we did together. And so, yeah. And of course, there was a couple times where we'd be up. And now remember, Phil Moore was a comedian and Michael Malley was a comedian. Mm-hmm. And sometimes, you know, your adult humor comes out and you accidentally pop. You know, drop a bomb during one of the shows, and then you don't even realize until after the show. You know, Phil would go, "You know that you said shit, right?"
No, I didn't.
Or you know that you said damn. So, you know, producers would be like, "Donnie, you know, watch your language." Or, "Hey, Mike, you just dropped the shit bomb, dude." So, we had to be careful with that, but as far as the episodics on air stuff that we filmed, I'm sure there were so many bloopers and so many mess ups. I mean, a lot of times it was just the atmosphere and we were trying to say the lines, and half the times the lines wouldn't come out right, you know. A lot of times I had a hard time explaining the game because a lot of times I didn't even understand the darn game. So just breaking it down for people was, and then your interviews at the end were sometimes awkward. You'd ask somebody a question and they kind of clammed up a little bit and you're trying to keep the energy up and it's kind of that womp womp moment. Mm-hmm. So other than that, I think we worked with an elephant once. That was interesting. The only time in my life that I rode an elephant. All kinds of crazy things.
Was this on the show or a live tour?
It was on the show. It was on the show. We had an elephant on the show. It was the one that, like, they dressed Omar up as a prince or something. I don't know. It's been so many years. I really do need to go back and take a look at it. I think I'm scared to go back and take a look at a lot of it. I have a box up in my closet. My wife keeps on telling me that I need to take in and get them all transferred to DVD. It's just a box of VHS tapes of all of the shows from Wild and Crazy Kids to Punky Brewster and Who's the Boss and Cagney and Lacey and Wonder Years and my Hostess commercials, my Barbie and the Rockers commercials, all kinds of crazy stuff that I did back in the day. And I need to get that box out and take a gander at it, see what I can remember. Yeah. You know, a little,
like
little
a
scroll down memory
stuff
lane.
You have up there.
You bet. There sure is. Great. Quite a few years of some phenomenal memories.
They should release Wild and Crazy Kids on like DVD or Netflix or something. Like, they should.
You'd think.
You would think so.
I would. I mean, you know, I keep on telling my manager the other day, I said, why don't we get a publicist and let's do some of these Comic-Cons and some of these nostalgic events they have going these days, kind of like, you know, your podcast. It's a really popular thing right now. And I'd love to be back in around the fans and be able to interact with people and reminisce about the old days. That would be a lot of fun for me. So if anybody out there knows it, you know, contact me.
Yeah, contact them.
Let me know. But yeah, you'd think that they'd at least rerun it or put it in a little DVD package of some sorts. But I'm sure there's probably some, you know, legality things going on with who owns it, who owns what. Like I said, I don't think Nickelodeon has ever had 100% ownership over Wild and Crazy Kids. I could be wrong, but I think my understanding was is it was they were just a part owner, if any, of the show.
Right.
So,
because I see these other Nickelodeon shows and stuff on DVD. Like, it'd be cool to see some of these game shows on there too.
Yeah. I think my buddy Dave Martell, he was on, was it one of these shows? Give me some of the actual shows that, like, Hey Dude. It was Hey Dude, All That. The Adventures of Pete and Pete. So Dave Martell was a reoccurring role on the Adventures of Pete and Pete. He's one of my best friends. Yeah. And he was telling me recently that he had got a check from some reruns or something that they brought it back on. They do that Nick at Night, back to the 90s or something.
Yeah,
show. But they haven't done that. In fact, my wife told me that she saw some clips of Wild and Crazy Kids on a commercial for the Nick at Night, and she saw me on the clip, and she's like, "I think they're bringing it back, but they still haven't. They've just used the clips of them." And again, it could be something to do with, legality, and who owns what. So
that seems like the most likely case.
Well, you look at the show like Wonder Years. I mean, I was just thinking about it the other day. You can't find it anywhere. And that's because of what happened with the Wonder Years and the music rights. So they used all these huge songs, from rock stars around the, from the 60s and the 70s. And I guess they didn't ask for the permission. They didn't get the rights to it. And so that's why they've never been able to release the show, because wow, it would cost them so much money to buy the rights to the music that they used during the, during the seasons. Yeah. So, again, this is just stuff that I've heard. I don't know, but sometimes you run into those issues.
When you guys were on the show, how did you know that there weren't going to be any more episodes of Wild and Crazy Kids? Did they tell you guys in advance, or did you guys just stop?
No, we had to have been told in advance, because I remember going to the wrap party. I remember when we had the final party. It was actually right up here in Burbank at this restaurant. And so they did let us know that that would be the last season. It was not going to be picked up for another season. We all were outgrowing it. I mean, we were all graduating. I was graduating high school, and, everybody was getting a little older. And so we didn't know if it was going to come back or not, but we were told that season at this point where it was going to be our last season. And I think also, man, that we had done so many games. I mean, how many more games could people make up?
That's so true.
You
can start running out of ideas.
Exactly.
Yeah. Man. Did you keep any when you left, keep any like memorabilia or anything? I know you mentioned the t-shirts from before.
Yeah, I had the t-shirts. I mean, I had a lot of the clothes were given to us from, Reebok, and we had different sponsors throughout the years. But as far as memorabilia goes, I don't think I really have much other than the t-shirts. Yeah. We didn't really have many props. I mean, of course, we had set props that they would, especially I think the second or third season when they started creating outdoor sets that they'd bring, and you had the big exclamation marks and stuff kind of sat around us. But all that disappeared with the show.
Right. Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah. You see all these Nickelodeon shows right now getting reboots like Double Dare and all that. Do you ever see a Wild and Crazy Kids reboot ever happening?
I don't know. It's certainly something I think could be a lot of fun. But I have no idea. You know, who's working over there now is Phil Moore. Yeah. And, of course, Mark Summers is still a big part of it. I think that David Dobrik's ex-girlfriend is now the host of Double Dare. I can't remember her name, but he actually did a show over at my dojo.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah. I don't know. Phil's been working on his stuff. He's going to be bringing back. I don't know if it's Nick Arcade or some form of that, but he works really hard. I know you spoke with him last year, but he's always busy just kicking around ideas with Nickelodeon. He's over there I think he's producing over there right now. I know he's in one of the departments. Back in the offices. So and I think he was doing his own little nostalgic on-air interviews with different actors from the 80s and 90s for a while. He was trying to launch something like that, and I'm not sure if it ever took off or not, or if he's still working in pre-production for it. I did an episode with him about a year or so ago.
Oh, you did?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, just a little pilot teaser. I think he had Mark on it as well.
He's one of the hardest working men, man.
He sure is. And I mean, that energy does not stop. He's in faith. He's one of my favorite people. We had so much just absolute fun times together. So many great memories with Phil and Mike. Anytime I run into Mike O'Malley, he's just big hug. Yeah. We had a blast on some of the most memorable experiences of my life were on tour. I actually turned 21 on tour. I remember my birthday was, we were somewhere, I think up in Oregon, I think. And I turned 21 and we went downstairs for a beer in the hotel bar and played pool that night. Wow. I'm still friends with a lot of the crew that I used to be on tour with. Because I grew up, I mean, that was some real formidable years in my life. So the memories, you know, really last. I was kind of my college. I mean, I went to college down at UCI for a couple of years, but a big part of my education was basically the acting career that I had.
Yeah.
You know, and then the touring. And anytime we went, no matter where we were, I would always try to see all the sites. I mean, Wilmington, Delaware, I'd still try to find what's out there. You know, we'd go out and, on little adventures. I'd meet people, you know, sometimes I'd meet the crew. And I remember staying with some people at their houses that I had met just through doing the show and staying a few extra days just to kind of see the area. I remember being up in Burlington, Vermont, and made friends with some of the crew members of the local theater we were at. And they invited me to stay at their house and took me out to the lake, and we all went swimming and barbecued and, you know, so it was just a really cool time, of life.
Like a very magical time period.
Yeah.
Yeah. Let's say if they did come out with a Wild and Crazy Kids reboot, would you be interested in being involved in it if they approached you?
Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah, I think the last podcast I did asked the same question, and I still consider myself an actor and a performer for life. It's in me. It's been part of my life forever. I get a big dose of it even when I'm teaching self-defense and martial arts. You know, and I'm still involved. A lot of my students are in the industry, and right now I'm actually training some people for the new Marvel movie, The Eternals. So we're, you know, I'm still involved in it. A lot of my clients are directors and actors and producers and writers. And so I've kind of created this little community that's based on the entertainment industry and in our artistic industry. And it'll always be a part of me. So if somebody knocked on my door or called my manager and was like, "Hey, man, we want to reboot this," I'd be down. I'd absolutely get excited about something like that. That'll always be a part of me. That's same with my wife. My wife and I are artists for life. You know, we do other things in life and explore other avenues. But I think once you're bitten by the acting bug and you're a true thespian, I don't think that ever leaves you.
Yeah, that's true. So tell us some more about your self-defense karate academy. Like you said, when did you start that? You said 8 years ago?
I started the company 8 years ago. Yeah, I opened my doors in 2011 in June, and we just had our 8-year anniversary in June 2019.
Yeah,
I started teaching back in 2006, I want to say 2005-6, at another studio down the way here for a company, and then I just kind of had my fill of that corporate style martial arts company. It was a little bit of a franchise, a little bit of a McDojo vibe. I just was not into and decided that I wanted to do something my way. And once I left, about 75% of that school came with me. So when I opened, I had students already in classes, which was great. And since then, I think I opened with about 50 something students, and now we're up to 225 students, all ages from 3 years old to 73 years old. So we have a big adult program and huge kids programs. And then I also train people out of their homes, and some of the, you know, Hollywood elite want private lessons and such. So we do that for them. And it's just been a really cool little adventure too, you know. And the school's based on strengthening mind, body, and spirit. It's a Kempo school, which is a blend of kung fu, karate, and jujitsu. But it's all about the self-defense. It's about practical. So it's very important for me as the owner of the school to continue teaching people how to actually learn how to defend themselves and build the confidence, you know, and the aura that that produces kind of an assertive personality out there, environmental awareness, how to deal with situations and confrontations without having to throw a punch. You know, I teach a lot of women's self-defense groups and in classes throughout the years. And so we just focus on trying to create a healthy community, bettering people's lives. It's pretty neat group of people. And I enjoy it. I love to punch and kick people. It's a lot of fun.
It's a lot of, yeah, it is a lot.
I tell you, I could not ask for a bike. I can actually go to work, and if I need to hit somebody, I just grab them and say, "Hey, can I hit you?" "Yeah, okay, then hit me back. That's fine."
I get in any trouble for it. That's the best.
You don't even have to worry about getting in trouble. That's right. No, it's a blast, man. Kempo's a great universal system, and that's why I'm able to teach all over the world, because there's American Kempo schools all over the country, all over the world. So it's a big, big community, and gives me creative pleasure as well, because when I'm teaching, I'm improvising and I'm working off of people's energy, and I get a chance to be creative, you know, I'm still working as a student as well. I train with my teachers. I just received my fifth degree black belt in October, and I train on a weekly basis and stay active. And you know, my ultimate goal is one day to get that 10th degree black belt, and that's the lifetime achievement award. That won't be until I'm in my 70s or so, but yeah, it's just a lifetime. You know, it's a lifelong journey. It's a lifestyle. And it's definitely helped me become a better man, and it's really enhanced my life. And it's, you know, when you're teaching others, you're also being taught. So it's just a really cool full circle, you know. And I tell my students that as well. It's like, you guys are teaching me just as much as I'm teaching you, and we're all sharing life together. So
that's pretty cool.
Yeah, dude, it's awesome. It's very cool.
So, if anyone that's listening right now is interested in checking out your academy, who lives in the Los Angeles area or is going to be in the Los Angeles area, how would they find it?
Shaolin American Self Defense Academy. You can Google us, Shaolin American Self Defense. I think it's ShaolinAmericanSDA.com. So S is in self, D is in defense, A is in academy.com. You could please follow us on Instagram, Facebook. You know, I usually keep my Donnie Jeffcoat Facebook account personal, but then I also have my Shaolin American account out there, so you can like that, follow me on there, and just give us a call, you know, anytime. We always give everybody a free week. It's a free private lesson. I teach the majority of the classes for the adults. I do teach some of the kids' classes as well, but I'm pretty much the adult sensei, and we have a really healthy group of people, and just a wonderful community, and just awesome vibe. And so anybody and everybody, and we welcome. It's an open door process there. I mean, welcome, Matt. It's anybody of any level, of any skill level. Multiple, you know, people have all kinds of goals. So whether it's, I need to get myself in shape, lose weight, I want to learn how to fight, I want to learn how to defend myself, I want to learn confidence, I want to, you know, build a spiritual strength. It's all there. It's all within, you know, whatever you want to get out of it. The program will definitely help you succeed.
Yeah, that's a really good thing you got going there, man. It sounds awesome.
It really is, man. It's a huge gift in life. I mean, again, it's like with my adventures in acting, and then all of a sudden I'm owning my own martial arts school. It's been kind of, sometimes I have to pinch myself. I'm like, wow. What a neat little journey. Not to say that there hasn't been ups and downs, brother, because there's been plenty. but I've worked my way through them, and we've all that's what makes us human. And I tell you, it's been a neat one. It's been a lovely journey. I'm not done yet.
That's great to hear, man. It's been awesome having you on the podcast today. Any final words to your fans before we wrap it up?
Hey, always stay wild and crazy, folks. Enjoy. Come and see me at the dojo anytime. I'm always right. happy to talk and share stories. So I really appreciate you, brother. I thank you for having me. And it's always nice to talk about the past and reminisce about those good old days.
Always. And you got some – do you have any Comic-Cons coming up?
You know, I don't. I've been trying to get involved in that. In fact, I told Phil the other day, hook me up, because I think he does quite a bit of that stuff. So I'm going to try to get more involved. I'd like to get out there and be in and around the fans again. So we'll see. We'll see what happens. If anybody ever is listening to this and they have ideas or a place that they want to possibly pitch me to, then let me know. I'll be more than happy to join in. And I'm a comic book geek as well. I mean, I have piles of comics sitting in every corner of my house here, so yeah. I just like to be there. I don't even need to be the guest. I'm probably gonna head up over to in a couple of weeks. I think LA Comic Con is coming out, so we might head over there, my wife and I. Man,
all right, sounds good, man. Donnie, been a pleasure having you on. So
thanks, brother. All the appreciate best to you. And you know, if anything comes up in the future you want to reconnect, please feel free to reach out at any time. I'm glad we were able to make this finally work and fit our schedules right.
Yeah, I know.
It took us a bit.
Took us a while, but we got there.
We got it. Well, okay. So I wish you all the success in the world, and just
you too,
you know, please right. make sure you forward me anything, and I'll post away. Okay.
All right. No worries, man. All right.
Okay, brother.
I really enjoyed having some time to talk to Donnie Jeffco about his time hosting Wild and Crazy Kids. I want to give a special shout out and thank Donnie for coming on the show. It was really great to hear what kind of things he has been up to. You know, with all these recent Nickelodeon reboots of Double Dare and all that, it would be really cool to see a Wild and Crazy Kids reboot happen one day.
I agree, Daddy. That would be awesome. This should bring the whole crew back to host Donnie, Omar, Annette, and Jessica Gaines as the hosts, especially Jessica Gaines. I love me some Jessica Gaines, Daddy.
Yeah, I'm sure you do, buddy. Hey, I can hardly move in here. This slide is so big. I can't even... Where are you?
I'm up here, Daddy.
Your head is literally touching the ceiling, and this water slide is already leaking water on the floor. This does not look safe at all.
Of course it is, Daddy. Look, I have made us some Wild and Crazy Kids shirts for us to put on while we do the obstacle course. Here, Daddy. You're the blue team? Now I'm Team Red, Daddy. Let me throw it down to you.
What? I never said anything about doing this obstacle course with you. Wait, let me see this shirt. Jimmy, no, this shirt doesn't even say Wild and Crazy Kids. It says Mild and Lazy Squids.
Oh, that guy who printed it had a problem with some of the letters on this printing program. It was the best he could do.
Jimmy, be careful up there. Now, how does this thing even supposed to work? This slide looks very shaky.
Oh, Dad, it's very simple. First, you climb on top of the water slide, just like I did. You start sliding down head first into the kiddie pool that's filled with Hawaiian Punch and Skittles. The person with the most Skittles in their mouth wins.
Yeah, I'm not doing that. That thing looks like it's about to collapse any second. I told you, we do not have the right setup for this.
Oh, nonsense, Daddy. I'm about to slide head first. Ready? Set? Whee! All right, this is fun, Daddy.
Jimmy, are you okay?
I'm all right. Wait, is it normal to see flying saucers chasing tiny marshmallows?
Oh, boy. It sounds like you may have a concussion. We're going to have to get you checked out.
Check? I will do direct deposit, Daddy.
Okay, yeah, you're really out of it. Anyways, folks, we hope you enjoyed this edition of The Throwback. We have a very special edition of The Throwback that will be coming out very soon with a very cool guest. Keep checking back with us on Twitter, @ThrowPodcast, or on Instagram, @Throwback_podcast, to find out who in the coming days and weeks. Until next time, Jimmy, let's get you to a doctor.
But I'm not hungry, Daddy. I just ate Taco Bell for lunch.
Goodbye, everybody.
Thanks for listening. Be sure to check us out on Twitter @ThrowPodcast or on the web at www.blogtalkradio.com/throwback.